morning about March in 53 that I said to Oscar, just go to Norway. We have the money now for a trip. And we should be going before we're too old. No, not me. I can't leave the garden this time of year. And I don't care too much about going back there anyway. I'd like to stay home and take care of things. Take care of the flowers and the whole place. But you go. Shall I say, most anything I guess I'll do.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, I want to start on this deal of going to Norway. One breakfast time, Oscar and I were sitting at the table, and I said to him, I said, why don't we go to Norway?
Well, if I...
Well, that noise was made without my having this thing on. Oh, yeah. That Oscar was already deep in his seed catalogs. It was April, getting slushy. And even the birds were beginning to come back, the robins being the first ones. We were sitting at the breakfast table. And suddenly I thought of something, or I thought of it over again, what I had been thinking of. I said, let's go to Norway. We can afford it now, and it wouldn't take long. You'd be back probably before it's time to really put in your garden. No, he said, I'm not going, but you go. I'll take care of things. I'll stay home and take care of the house. That's what he always said. Well, he decided that I should go. We were very casual about it, as if it was only going to, as if it were only going to over to St. Paul. Then there was all the getting ready. The passport pictures, vaccination, and all the rest. However, I won't go into that especially, except there was a question of my getting a passport. This was during the McCarthy days, and while I hadn't had any particular trouble, I was, as you know, a farmer laborer. So I did the thing in a hurry. I sent my request for a passport by telegram and asked for a return by air mail. Well, I got it. I was able to get a reservation on the Oslofjord. But when the night came to go, then I began to have some doubt. It was the first time Oscar and I had been separated for any time at all, hardly anywhere overnight. That evening that we took the train for New York, as Don and Oscar left me, I really did feel as if I was going out into the void. I forgot to say, in regard to getting my passport, and I talked about having belonged to the Farm Labor Party, we farmer laborites were supposed to be very respectable. But since then, the DFL hierarchy has been boasting for some 20 years of how we were purged out of the party. My sister and her husband were going to live in the house, so I knew that Oscar would be taken care of as far as meals were concerned. And I thought that he would be quite happy with his garden and all. My cabin mates were a mother and her daughter. Changing trains in Chicago was no problem. All I had to do was to go along with the crowd, and many of them kind enough to help me when needed or guide me. Then the following night, we went through Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. All along the way, there were the flames belching to the high heavens. Large smelters and small smelters. And I thought of all I had read about the men working in those steel smelters, the melons getting rich from their work and their manipulations. My two cousins, Elmer Hegman, who has a position in Greenwich, New York, as a psychiatrist in the schools there, and Arthur, who was living in New York City, both met me. They laughed because they said I didn't have time to see who they really were before I kissed them. But I was very glad to see them, and they took care of me, and they gave me breakfast and brought me down to the boat and saw that I was safely there and on my way. My baggage was already in the cabin, and there was a corsage, a beautiful corsage sent me by the dear women of the Cooperative Guild. My cabin mates were a mother and her daughter going back to Norway for this justice. The mother was born there and had been there so many times. I am thinking as I write how very different my going to Norway in 1953 was from my coming as an infant with my parents to this new country then was in 1882. I think I've said before that my mother didn't want to see the ocean again, but I know now that my father longed to see it and was lonesome many, many times for the mountains and even the rough, savage North Sea. To me, life on the boat was ever interesting, and I never got bored, because if nothing else, there was always the ocean to look at, the vast ocean, sometimes stormy, sometimes calm, mostly a little angry. We were shut off from the world during those days. on ship, except for the ship's paper, which was eagerly awaited every morning. I could sit endlessly watching purposes play, the high waves, and even got used to being tossed around in the chain chairs in storm. In the evening, I would go to an upper deck and sit looking out over the ocean through the vast darkness. And I would think of my, thought of my father, how he and perhaps old Andrew would tell about the old country, how as young sailors, or how as a young sailor my father went to sea, to North Cape, to the slums of London, of Liverpool. And in those days, they must have been very bad slums. Along the coast of sunny Spain, he loved the sea, and out on the farm, he was lonely for it. My mother would have none of it. I think partly because her sisters and her brothers, but my father didn't have any of his family here with him. And my mother was so sick coming over the ocean that she said she never wanted to see it again. She didn't seem to long a great deal for her old home, but my father spoke often of it. And I was to see both the homes. The meals on the Oslo Ford were an event, every one of them. The menus, the dinner menus with the pictures of scenic Norway, and also the luncheon menu, breakfast menu, with the pretty girls and the scenes of Norway, the girls in national costumes, and the smorgasbord that they always had. Breakfasts with fruit and eggs and every kind of cereal, and the luncheon with a cold table, Norwegian cold table, all kinds of meats and cheeses, and boiled potatoes and cream cakes, biscuits and butter and bread, with great big roasts and luscious puffed out prunes and all the vegetables. I did lose a couple of meals, but I didn't miss any meals, and I kept myself pretty well prepared during the storms with one of those cartons that we could carry around in case of disaster. The first sight of land rough coast of Scotland, the mountainous coast of Scotland, of legend and story. And I remembered the Lady of the Lake, stag at eve, had drunk his fill, where danced the moon on morning's rill, and deep his midnight lair had made in the own Glenarvan's ocean. So the young Lochinvar had come out of the west, and there was Bobby Burns. But pleasures are like poppies spread, you see the flower, its bloom is shed, or like the snowfalls in the river, a moment white and gone forever, or like the boy out of the face that fills. Flits ere you can point their place are like the rainbow's lovely form, evanishing amid the storm. I believe that is in the poem about Kitty Salt. And late in the afternoon, the outline of Norway began to appear faint, and then more and more mountains. The outline jutting out, just as that peninsula does on the map. It looked as if I was looking at a map coming into the field. And then it became more and more distinct. And then as the darkness fell, the lights began to come on against the black of the mountains. And the land of the thousand homes was lighting up for the night in the villages and up, up along the mountain sides, here and there, fainter and fainter. About midnight, I stepped on the soil of Kristiansand of Norway. Not soil, but cobblestone and pavement. We would have to go out in the country or in some park to actually step on the soil of Norway. There were the usual Norwegian faces that I suppose come to every ship that enters, but they didn't come in on the dock. We walked around for some time until it was nearly time to start again for Denmark. But it was my first time in Norway since I left it. That's about 2 months old. We had several hours in Denmark, a little time for sightseeing. How is this? Bad yet, isn't it?
Move over a bit and see what it does. Wind coming.
Far away? How's that? Huh? Is it bad? Is it all right?
It's still doing it.
Huh?
I can still hear it. Not as bad.
I wonder, what's the matter then? What can I do? Nothing, maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe it's done that all the time. Or what?
I read it here, it says.
Huh? You see? There is nothing to do.
You think some more?
Yeah, I have. Well, there's Susie.
I was?
Uh-huh. And maybe I can tell it that way, too.
I don't remember what you...
Well, when we were talking, heck, I wrote that. I'll even hunt it up. I better write. I better tell about Susie first now. But,
when did you first meet her? When did you first meet her?
I don't know. I first knew her at some of these demonstrations and meetings of the association. I knew her when we had conventions and so on. I got to know her. And then I knew her as a speaker. I knew her as some of them had her at the Social Science Club to speak. And I knew her with the WCPU. She was very active with that.
Oh, yeah, she was against
me. And she was a great Lutheran. She kept up her connection, and she believed in it, too. She was a real church person.
Mm.
a Christian, but she was a Christian, which is rather different from being a church member at times. I can see her always. She was always very nicely dressed for her size. She looked very well. She walked so slowly that I had to see to it that when we started to cross the street, as soon as we got the signal, and then we had to kind of push, I had to kind of push her along a little bit in order to get across before the signal changed.
Oh.
She went with, didn't you know that? She went with slow, mincing steps, you know, and always so slow.
Her children must have been quite young when you first knew her.
Well, she was young and active, and I don't know. I think her husband was living when I first knew her, but not for long. I knew her mostly as living alone on that hilltop.
Well, in the 30s, she was, her sons must have all been quite young, and her husband didn't die until after the war, did he?
Maybe not. I just don't
remember.
I don't
think so.
And
how did she leave her four children and do all the things she did? She had four boys.
Well, I rather suspect there were things neglected a little bit. Not because she wanted to or couldn't do them, but I don't see where she got time because she was so slow in doing it. And she had a sister that would come and help her get the house straightened up. We had several picnics out there, we farmer labor women, and we had a very good time. Of course, we all brought food.
She was editor of a farm paper during the 30s.
And, yes, and she wrote for Victor Lawson's paper. She wrote a column for that, and she wrote a column for the Minnesota Boston. And I always looked forward to it very much.
That was later.
That was later, but she wrote that until she died, almost. She wasn't sick very long. I didn't hardly know of her illness.
She had cancer like Marion. She had cancer like Marion. It just went fast.
Internal, I guess. And she died suddenly. Well, she used to come here. She usually had... came and had her and stayed with her son, and then they would bring her here. But once in a while, she'd come to the bus depot and come right out, phone, so Oscar would meet her at the bus, at the streetcar. It was streetcars in those days. And she'd come right out, and we'd talk. And I remember she sometimes came after supper. We'd had supper, but I'd get something for her to eat. She never drank coffee, and she didn't drink tea.
Oh.
And she'd sit there and have a little bite of something, and have hot water and a little dab of milk in it. And I used to think it was kind of feeble. And we'd talk and talk into the night. And then when it time for her to go to bed, she'd never get ready to go to bed. It'd be another hour before she could get undressed. I'd make her bed for her here. And Oscar would be in bed and sleeping before we'd get to bed. She was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Her brown eyes, and she was always so happy looking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she always was. I think she was very lonely. She had her husband's love letters in a box And every so often she'd read them.
Oh.
Read them all through. I guess she knew them.
Oh.
And I used to wonder how she could read them. I suppose she didn't for some time, until sometime after he had died.
Did you see them together much?
No, I didn't know him. I never saw him. So I think that all happened much before, well, before I knew her. I was here quite a while before I even knew her. She had a way about her of being so very acting, being so very glad to see you or to see anybody. And she certainly liked to talk about things. And she could always make a very well, very good speech. Is there a speech of hers in there? I've forgotten.
Uh-huh. Her biography is in here, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I remember one story that they told about her. She was, of course, a very definite temperance person. I want to tell this. And
you heard the story
that there were, she was with a bunch of farmer labor people, and some of them were drinking. They must have been in some place where they could have liquor. And Elmer Benson was there, who doesn't drink either. Benson says, "Well, how do you feel about that? You see them taking, drinking liquor." And well, she said, "I'll say this: that I hate the sin, but I love the sinner." Another time, I remember a time. I had belonged to the WCTU, but I was very much disillusioned because I began to feel that they were completely controlled by the liquor, by the conservatives, and they were supporting Stassen as against. Had supported Stassen against Elmer Benson and all the rest of it. Well, they had a state convention here, and Susie and I went. And what they were emphasizing then, it was a very critical time, too. The WCTU people had been against war when I belonged. They had taken a good stand against war, but that was some time before, besides being for temperance. But this time, when we were approaching war, before the time, it was during that period when we seemed to be oriented towards a war against the Soviet Union, which was happening before we went to war against Germany. And so they had dropped all of that. They had dropped every issue. They didn't seem to talking too much about the problems of temperance either. And their main problem at that convention was parliamentarians.
That's Selma probably.
That Susie and I went to. And so they, instead of taking any issues or taking any stand on anything, all they talked about that at that meeting was parliamentarianism, to know your rules of order, to know how to conduct a meeting, and this is the thing I remembered, is that they said that if you know that a minority can control a majority. Now, in those days, I judged everything. It's pretty much black and white. I judged organizations by my experience in the political movement, and I was beginning to see what that meant. A minority ruling a majority. And I can see them and hear them so plainly yet talking about that. It's surprising how completely, from the Citizens Alliance through the churches, through all those organizations, how completely they were controlled, and deliberately they were controlled by the ruling circles.
Was this true in the Farmer Labor Party?
Did I what?
Is this true in the Farmer Labor Party?
No. The Farmer Labor Party was a different organization.
They didn't have a minority that...
They tried. They tried. There was a minority in there that tried to rule it. But the setup was democratic. And the setup was supposed to be democratic in all of them, but it wasn't. It's not in the churches. The rank and file of church members, at least where I've been, they don't know what's going on. We didn't know what was going on. And we were not invited to know what was going on either. I've said something about the women's organizations. All we were was an adjunct to earn money and to put on the suppers and all the rest of it and to work. But as far as to running the church, I don't know.
The women didn't take orders from men even.
It was the first democratic organization that I really belonged to. It was the first time that I really realized that everything else wasn't democratic.
You also initiated things. The farm labor women initiated
yes.
the political... They didn't take orders from men.
Yes.
You always were taking orders from men, even when you were a teacher.
Well,
men
yes.
were the principals.
Yes, when I was a teacher, I did. Well, I had different kinds of superintendents, too. I had a superintendent over us. But not only, the superintendents were generally pretty good. Although I had one that... Well, probably this isn't the place to tell about that. But talking about democracy, I had one superintendent. I stayed there only 1 year, and then that was the time before I went to teach with Oscar. And he had been so patriotic during World War I that they'd taken that Academy songbook, and he had blacked out, had the pupils black out the German songs.
Oh. Oh, that's it.
That was like De Lorelei and some of
oh.
them. Do you see the German words are in there? And the head blacked out. Well,
you never asked about the First World War, the anti-German feeling. That was pretty strong in Minnesota and Dakota.
Yes, yes.
I don't believe you touched on that. Did you have any experience?
No, that goes into my Dakota story, though.
Well, put it in. You don't
Should
have
I,
to have a...
Here?
Because we forget about it, you know.
Well, I can't begin to. That's a long story. I have told some about it when we went to talk to, when we heard Walter Thomas Mills, and we went to the.
But did you the persecution
that's
of
in, with a strong
the persecution thing. of radicals? You know, Lundin was locked in a boxcar to smother. Lundin was locked in a boxcar to die. And,
I didn't know anything about. I didn't really, at the time, know much about what was happening in Minnesota.
Marion couldn't go to a movie. She was hounded. My mother was hounded by the authorities. We wouldn't let her go to a movie because she wouldn't stand up for the Star Spangled Banner. Uh-huh. Marion.
Well, now, there is a difference. There is a difference between North Dakota and Minnesota. We didn't have that persecution. Well, that is, we had the attempt at it. But the nonpartisan league.
It was almost smashed by the war. The nonpartisan league was smashed by the war.
Well, it wasn't smashed. Yes, it was. But we did not have. In spite of the fact that my my voting precinct, Scoville, where we lived, and the farming community around it was 100% nonpartisan league, they couldn't touch us. The citizens, I guess they call it the Citizens Alliance, that is the other group. And another thing, from town in Lisbon, they depended so much on the buying power and the patronage of the farmers. And any of them that got too active, the farmers would just boycott them and buy from the others. In other words, we had quite a bit of power there. They'd come out to the schoolhouse and they'd have to go back to talk. Either nobody would go or those that went just about chased them out. That's what happened in North Dakota, and I know it because I was there all summer.
In your county?
Huh?
In your county where they had 100%?
Pretty much around.
But people fled into Minnesota from Dakota. You know, they stayed at our house. Some places there was a terrible...
Well, that might have been.
Arthur couldn't go back there even. We had rocks.
Well,
we had rocks thrown through our window.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We had our books stolen and burnt in our front yard.
Well, I heard about that.
Gosh.
And of course, the papers didn't tell about it. I don't know.
Of course, Minnesota.
It just seemed as if that was outside of my own personal experience.
Well, your county being 100% nonpartisan league.
It was. It voted that.
Mm-hmm.
That is by vote.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get a vote.
Not
and,
one, huh?
So we were a community. We had all those picnics all summer. What they did in the winter, I don't know.
But they couldn't have refused to go to war. You didn't have your young men, must have had to go. Did they? They couldn't have refused to go.
Now, wait a minute. No, they didn't refuse to go. That is, there were so few. They were the children of the second generation. The second generation was too old.
They sort of fell between.
Young. There weren't very many. As far as I remember, none of the Devitts went to that war. They went to, they were farming. They were young farmers, had families, and they didn't have to go. And then, a lot of them, they went to the Second World War. That's where most of them are veterans now. They're living off that money, too. Well,
this is a good thing about Susie. Susie was one of those rare, gentle people who still had a backbone reinforced with Christian courage to take up any worthy cause, no matter how unpopular. Engaging in politics and living by the Bible are the requisites of the good life, she said. Both give a sense of direction. Yeah, she was one of the... I knew a lot of Christian socialists, but I think she was the most Christian and the most socialist I ever knew.
Well, she was. That she surely was.
There was a lot of Christian socialists in that period. As Elmer used to say, they carried the Christian paper in one pocket and the appeal to reason in the other pocket.
Yes. And I feel that that is perhaps one mistake of the radicals. They condemn the church instead of making it a point that if you're going to be a Christian, you got to be a socialist.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to maintain that point. And another thing, I could, and perhaps I should have stayed on. But as I told before, I have told about our leaving it. I left. Oscar wanted to leave long before I did. He wanted to go over into the humanist church, so the Unitarian, but I didn't do it so soon. Well, coming back to, and that's what happens to the WCTU. Now, here's one thing that I got together. Now, if I can find it, well, I'll have to hunt for that. Putting together getting her a living. We had those picnics over there, and we'd bring food. I don't think she just had so.
She never had any running water until the last part of her life.
She had to pioneer all her life.
Did I tell you the story about when she got the money from the university?
Yeah, well,
And I asked her, she was going to spend it to put in a toilet. Yeah. She only got $1,000 or $2,000 or something. It cost her about $1,000 to get a running water.
Yeah.
And this time she was already 81 years old. And I said, you know, what do you want to spend all that money, you know, now?
Yeah.
When you won't be here very long.
That's right.
And she said, where am I going? She says, I'm not going anywhere.
That's pretty good.
But for 3 years, she had a toilet. I guess it was worth it.
And during that Farmer Labor Administration, she couldn't get a job at the Capitol.
Yeah.
But she got one during the Stassen Administration.
Anderson.
From the Republican.
Anderson gave her a...
Or was it Anderson?
Anderson said to her, didn't the Farmer Labor Party ever give you a job? And she said, no. And he says, well, then the Republicans will.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, that was it. And they were so willing, and they were always so good to her.
She wanted to get Social Security. You know,
yes.
She didn't have any social security. I guess she got it. She worked
for Well, she got either that or a pension. I guess she took the social security she could. And I thought that was a pretty decent gesture.
Yeah.
But I think Anderson was better than a lot of farm laborers.
Apparently he is. He's also a patron of the arts, apparently.
Yes. And certainly he is a lot better than Freeman. Now, Freeman could have given her a job. Another thing about, well, I guess it took a long time before we could get our pension raised from $250 a month to the $500 that we were supposed to have. I can't remember whether we finally got it in the last part of Freeman's administration.
Well, they didn't give women jobs, the Farmer Labor Party.
No.
Vienna's about the only one that got a job, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess so, as far as I remember. They could have plenty of jobs, but free for nothing. That is, they weren't paid. Do a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, is there anything more about Susie?
And on the WCTU, I want to read into this. Will you close that for a minute, Clark? Now, as far as I know, this is...
She belonged to the party? She belonged to the Socialist Party? She never belonged to the Socialist Party.
As far as I know, this is the only place I've seen it.
She just was a Socialist...
This is a Socialist songbook. And the songs have been written by Harvey P. Moyer. Have you ever heard of the name?
They weren't all written. It was collected. Were they written by him or collected?
Author of Vital Problems, This ABC of Socialism Simplified, and so on. It's always in a union. Words and Music by Harvey Moyer. All along. Oh, here, The Torch of Liberty, John Spargo. There are some that are.
You should tell Jim Youngdale. He's writing his thesis on labor and socialist songs.
Yes, this I should loan to him.
I didn't, yeah, that's
I remember.
That's a rare book.
Yeah, he'll probably be looking over my library and see what else I have. Now, I don't know, this is quite a bit, but...
About, why do you want to read Francis Willard? I can copy that, you know. I don't even have to take it down.
Well, then turn it off and I'll tell you about it a little bit. Well, I put look about you and so on. And she says in the end, the reason why I'm a socialist comes in just here. Well, what I will tell you about, you can copy this, is that I went through her autobiography. Frances Willard's autobiography was so voluminous that they cut it when they published it. And I couldn't find any reference to socialism in the published book.
Oh.
I feel that they have combed anything that is socialistic out of much of our literature.
Oh, that's true.
That we don't just get it.
Steinmetz.
You take the Harvard classes, and they have selected and have Walden Pond, but they haven't anything about what he says about civil disobedience or what he stood for that way. It's not there. And I can think of quite a number more.
Helen Keller was a socialist. Helen Keller was a socialist.
Yes. Well, once in a while we do see something about her. She's contemporary. Well, she died, didn't she, now, lady? And I think that's very deliberate. I think that's a job that has to be done, is to go through the writings and publish that side of it, of our people.
Well, that's what John Marshall is doing, I think, in his book. That's what John Marshall is doing.
Is that
in his
what
book.
He's doing in his book?
He's going to, he lived it.
Well, if he's doing that, he should make that plain to Russell, because it's going to make a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm.
If he's telling that, or if he's telling what everybody else that lived through the period knows.
Well, he's doing both, I think. He's trying to show what socialism was in American life.
Yeah.
In that period that he's
and
lived.
That would be very valuable. Well.
Let me see that. Well, have you got anything more to say about Susie?
I don't know. I just can't think of any more.
A White Ribboner's Pledge.
We had so many good times there. I have pictures of, I will put one in the book of our group at Susie's.
Oh, wow.
Where she's in. Marion was there, of course. And the rest of our family, right? Quite a number. I don't know. I don't.